may sound a little strange to hear our leaders connecting climate change to terrorism.
If you look at world history, whenever people are desperate, when people start lacking food, when people are not able to make a living or take care of their families, that's when ideologies arise that are dangerous.
Especially as Fox News is laughing at the threat.
The idea that the terrorists struck Paris in order to prevent or have anything to do with climate change is really so out there that you've got to ask yourself, what planet is the president living on?
It's got nothing to do with climate change.
But the link between climate change and terrorism is very real. Global warming is fueling massive droughts that lead to conflicts over food and water resources and amplify regional tensions to the point of violence. Vulnerable regions, such as coastal areas at risk from sea level rise, could produce a new set of refugees. Flooding and extreme weather pose risks to American naval ports and military bases, and the World Health Organization estimates that over the next few decades, climate change will cause 250,000 deaths each year from hunger, disease, and heat stroke. That's why the Department of Homeland Security and the Pentagon recognize climate change poses an immediate threat to our national security.
The Pentagon's new report on climate change was released Monday, and in it, Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel writing, quote, "In our defense strategy, we refer to climate change as a threat multiplier because it has the potential to exacerbate many of the challenges we are dealing with today, from infectious disease to terrorism."
About 7 years ago, the Center for Naval Analysis Military Advisory Board, a board composed of very distinguished 3- and 4-star retired admirals and generals, released a report that for the first time identified climate change as a threat multiplier and an accelerant to instability that could in fact impact national security.
A recent study found that climate change was likely responsible for the worst drought ever recorded in Syria, which in turn helped spark the Syrian civil war and the rise of ISIS.
Climate change led to crop failures, sending 1.5 million people migrating from farms to cities. Climate change pushed up food prices, aggravated poverty, and helped hasten the revolt against Syrian President Bashar al-Assad.
These types of disastrous droughts will only become more common in the Middle East and North Africa as global temperatures continue to rise. This is a big reason why it's so important that countries come together this year to act on climate change.
We talked a while ago on this program about atmospheres, the atmosphere of all the different planets. And depending on which planet you're talking about, especially the ones that are more immediate to Earth, some of them are too hot, way too hot, hundreds of degrees too hot. Some of them are too cold and under tons of sheets of ice. Some of them get little to no sun. And we have this thing here on planet Earth, this very perfect atmosphere, almost as if it was made for life. I'm not making the case for God, but what I am making the case for is the planet, a place that is not hostile to life. It lets in just enough sun, just enough heat, and it also lets it back out. The oceans are conducive to life. The soil grows food. Our weather systems move water around so that we can replenish those crops, so we can feed those crops. It's this absolutely perfect place that we have. And it's been good for life. But with that said, what we have decided, largely as Americans, because most of the rest of the world gets this, what we have decided as Americans is that this place needs to be burned to the effing ground. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out, a title more apt than ever, considering how hot it is right now. This is episode number 218. My name is Melvin, and yeah, today we're going to talk about the weather. We're going to talk about science. So I imagine there won't be a single Republican that will listen to this show in its entirety. Because what I've learned about these folks is that they don't particularly care about facts. So let me begin like this. There are wildfires all over the place. There are floods all over the place. Here, the headline, floods in India, Bangladesh, and Nepal kill 1,200 and leave millions homeless. One of the things that I've heard that has just been such a high point for Americans is, man, it's awful in Texas. Can you believe what's happening in Texas? So bad. But, hey, it hasn't killed that many people. It's been, what, like 10, 12, maybe 14 people have died. It's not so bad, right? Yeah, there's millions of dollars in damage, and there's tons of water, and you know, the, you know, it's now starting to recede, and, you know, Texas will be back, and all this other stuff, and but they haven't lost that many people. Well, what about India? What about Bangladesh? What about the millions that are homeless and the 1,200 that have died in the flooding? And they have been dealing with this for years in those particular countries. The temperature has reached 120, 130 degrees almost in those, and it's very, very hostile to life. And here in America, the people that we apparently care about, because we don't talk about what's happening in these other countries. I played that clip at the beginning because climate change is terrorism. We don't see it as that, but its effects are the same. And where climate change takes hold, which is essentially going to be everywhere now, in places where it takes hold, where they can't grow crops, where they can't have access to clean water, things of that nature. If the terrorists show up and they say, we can provide you with these things, then it's a lot more likely that the local populace is going to give safe haven to terrorists. So here in America, the people that we say that we care about, I'm looking outside my studio right now, and I broadcast right in front of a window, which is beautiful for my neighbors across the way, because they can look over here and they can see me doing the show and they see my arms flailing all over the place. And I probably mentioned that before. And sometimes they'll just stand there and watch me. And that's cool. You know, I do it in front of an open window. First of all, I like the scenery. I've recorded in studios before. I don't particularly care about looking at walls and, you know, and foam and all that other stuff. I like this right here, and I've worked in studios that had windows where people were able to look in and see what I was doing, and that's what this feels like. But anyway, so I'm looking outside my window right now, and it's a clear day with one notable exception. The air outside is completely red and dark. So there are wildfires all over the place. I'm broadcasting out of the Portland area. So we're getting a lot of smoke that is coming from fires in Montana, fires in Canada. And with the fires, there's also flooding going on all over the place too. So if you're here in America, it's the likelihood that you're being affected by all these things that have to do with climate change. And yes, the flooding has to do with climate change. The wildfires, we get wildfires, yes, but they're being made worse this year by the drier conditions. Because we haven't seen rain here in months, and that's very unlikely because it's kind of what we're known for in Portland. And so I look around and I say, we've got floods everywhere. We've got fires everywhere. And this is a summer day. This should be a clear summer day. But when I look outside, it looks like what I imagine hell would look like. It doesn't have to be this way. We don't have to do this to ourselves, but we do this to ourselves because we're so busy listening to the polluting industries and shysters that have just been selling us a bill of goods for so long.
If global warming is real, then why is there ice in my drink? Take that, science.
And we have been willing participants in destroying our own planet. And when I look outside the window, this is what we've done to ourselves. And are we any better for it? No. There are advisories that we shouldn't be working out. We shouldn't be working out outside. Shouldn't be working outside. Shouldn't be working out outside. I do both things. Whether it's for DJing or truck driving, I work outside. I do all of my exercising. All of it. Even during the coldest, wettest months, I do all of my exercising outside. Do everything outside. Hell, I would do this damn show outside if I could. I like being outside. But what I'm being told today is it's not a safe place to be. The air is not clean. The temperature's too hot, too muggy. Most of the homes in this area don't even have air conditioning. Because when a lot of these homes were built, nobody needed air conditioning. It didn't get that hot around here. But we're just getting hotter every single year.
Trump is, as you know, a well-known scientist, brilliant scientist. And he has concluded, after years of studying the issue, that climate change is a hoax brought to us by the Chinese. Now, that shocked me, Anderson, because I thought that he would have thought it was a hoax brought to us by the Mexicans or the Muslims. Chinese, I didn't quite get. But the point is, if you examine his agenda, it is not an agenda for working Americans. He wants to give hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the top 0.2%. So I think, and I would love the opportunity, frankly, I'm prejudiced, I want Trump to win the Republican nomination. And I would love the opportunity to run against him. I think we would win by a lot.
Of course, we know how everything turned out with respect to that, but that's what we're dealing with right now. And now, understand this, Trump knows that climate change is a real thing. And he says out loud that he does not believe in it because he says whatever his television tells him to say, whatever the last person that had his ear says, that's what he believes. That's what he repeats. He doesn't really have a core. And I know that he knows that climate change is real because he works in real estate. He works with land developers, which means he has to work with environmental scientists, especially when he builds things that are on a coast somewhere. You can't get away from that. You have to respect the science because you're not going to put up $100 or $200 or $300 million building knowing that it's just going to get washed away in 10 or 15 years. It's not a great investment for you. When you build something, you want it to be around for a long time. I mean, you build anything. You build a home, you build a business, you know, an organization. You build anything you want to. When you build something, you don't have an expiration date for it necessarily, or most of the time. You know, I'm sure for some things there are, I can't think of any now, but when you build something, you want it to be around for a long time, if not forever. And I know that he worked with those developers and those environmental scientists. And I know he knows this stuff is real. And he made financial decisions based on those things. But he doesn't have a core. He just says whatever he's told to say. And the polluting industries, those are the folks that have his ear right now. So there's an article over at Esquire by Charles Pierce. The headline, we're nowhere near prepared for the ecological disaster that Harvey is becoming. So we're talking about the flooding and all the homes that are being ruined. And that's a bad thing, certainly. People that are dying, people that refuse to leave their homes. You know, they're afraid of looters and all this other stuff. What Charlie Pierce points out is the ecological disaster. I want to bring in another part of it. So those homes that have been flooded out, and by the way, I believe, and I've predicted things in the past and been wrong, but I think I might be right on this one. I believe that we just lost a major American city down in Texas to this flooding. They got almost 60 inches of rain. And that storm came in, and then it went back out, and then it came back in, and then it went back out. They got hit several times. Houses filled to their roofs with water. So a lot of those homes, and by the way, most people don't have flood insurance. I think they said 9 out of 10 or something doesn't have flood insurance. And those that do have flood insurance, it doesn't really matter because they're private for-profit insurance companies and they're gonna screw you over. They don't want to pay those damn claims. There are claims from Superstorm Sandy, which was like 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, where the insurance company is still fighting with the homeowner about paying their claims. So what we're looking at is almost 100% of people down in Texas don't have homeowners or don't have flood insurance right now. And some of the ones that do have flood insurance, it's flood insurance, say, if a pipe breaks in your house, but it's not flood insurance if it's an act of God. These contracts are just... So a lot of those folks that have those houses down in Texas have mortgages on them. and it's pretty damn unlikely that they're going to continue to pay as agreed on these homes that are now complete losses. So what's going to happen to those loans? Well, those loans are going to go bad. There's tens of billions of dollars worth of homes in those affected areas. And those homes are just toast now. They're just going to be bulldozed over. And people might still owe $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 on a particular home. What do you think is going to happen with that? Well, the bank is going to have to take a bath, and they're going to have to declare a big fat loss. It's going to annihilate the credit of whoever bought the home, making it very unlikely they're going to be able to buy another home, at least in the near future. 7-10 years, something in that neighborhood. And that's if they even get their life back. But what about the bank? I think that this could, and this is one of the things people aren't thinking about, I think that this could potentially trigger a recession. Because the banks lose money. The banks start collapsing. Now, the Republicans are back in charge. So obviously, they're going to ride in on their white horses and they're going to save all these big banks. But are they? You got to understand the ideological split that's happening in the Republican Party right now. Not everybody is as on board as they once were with giving handies to banking CEOs. So, but Charlie Pierce points out the ecological disaster, the subheadline, 3 decades of bad decisions have led us to this moment. A little hard to read in here. I can't even turn the lights on in my studio because lights, more monitors, all that stuff adds heat. And it's too damn hot already. That's just how nasty it's getting. You ever heard me talk about how damn hot it is in my studio? No! Because this is the worst year by far. All the 4 years I've been recording, this is the worst year by far that I got to do this show in the dark with fewer monitors. I usually have monitors on, that way no matter where I turn in the room, I can see what's happening with the recording process because I do a lot of the production as well. But I can't even do it because it's too damn hot. So anyway, quoting here, it is the Christian thing to do in the middle of tragedies like the one currently unfolding along the Texas-Louisiana Gulf Coast, not to politicize human suffering. And certainly the stories of people rescuing their fellow citizens from this calamity deserve to be told, and they deserve to be spread as widely as possible. But there is nothing I can find in the Gospels that would forbid us from politicizing politics. So let us summon the ghost of Walter Winchell and review some of the events of the past few days. In Crosby, Texas, there's a place called the Arkema Chemical Plant. You might have heard about this, where they work with something called organic peroxides. The plant is located amid a residential and business district where, remarkably, human beings live and work. If the cooling systems in the plant fail, and they apparently have, these organic peroxides can explode. A 1.5 mile radius for the plant has been evacuated. So you may remember the explosion that happened in West Texas, the city of West Texas, leveled a gigantic chunk of that town. After it was a fertilizer plant. After that explosion happened, the Republican leadership decided that what they should do in response is remove regulations. I'm not kidding. It used to be, you used to have to keep a book on site, open to the public. You know, some of them would put it on their website. And you had to have in that book exactly what chemicals you had in that particular plant and in what quantities. Okay, this is sort of like a safety material data sheet, which is what most businesses have. And they decided after that explosion that the public no longer needed to know what was inside of any of these potentially dangerous plants anywhere. No more for you. No, you can't know. We will tell you it's good. We will tell you it's safe. So the Arkema plant, there is a reporter that's been trying to get that report. Can I get that report? I don't think it's time for that. I don't think you need to see that. I don't think it's time for that. It just is. The situation does not call for that. So you're not going to get it. And I'd really like to know what is in there. So these chemicals in the Arkema plant have to be kept cold. So it's a cold place. That has failed because it flooded. That's cool. They've got generators. They've got the generators up high. Well, they flooded. generators flooded. And now we're looking at another explosive situation. And reporters are trying to find out just how bad it's going to be when those explosions start happening. But the response to the explosions in West Texas at that fertilizer plant was not to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Quite the opposite. It was to make sure that when it does happen again, you can't look back at those informational sheets and figure out exactly what happened and why. With its massive petroleum and chemical industry, Houston, part of the Chemical Coast, presents a huge challenge in a major flooding event, said Matthew Stanislaus, who oversaw the federal Superfund program throughout the Obama administration. Typically, the EPA tries to identify Superfund sites in a major storm's path to shore up active operations and minimize seepage sites. This is not the time to dictate. It's the time to work together. Well, with some state and local officials to think about needs that need to be met. And the article goes on. In Baytown, there's a Chevron Phillips petrochemical facility in a place called Cedar Bayou. As you might have guessed from the name, the facility is, at present, fish food. ExxonMobil has similar problems, which it is involuntarily sharing with its fellow Texans and will be for some time. So, and there's places like this all over Texas. They don't have good regulations. They don't have zoning laws. And the same thing that has made Texas so prosperous, which is oil and gas and all these other things, that particular thing is also the thing that is beginning to do them in. There's not a lot of good reasons why we should still be burning petroleum. There's no good reason why we should be fracking. And yet there is still a discussion about fracking, and it's insane. And look back to last year's election. The positions, all the Republicans, frack, 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 explode, destroy, fine, who cares? The Democrats, you had wishy-washy Hillary. Well, maybe this, maybe that, maybe something, maybe, I don't know, maybe, 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 maybe. And then Bernie Sanders said, uh-uh, no, now this crap is done. No more of this.
You know, I don't support it when any locality or any state is against it, number one. I don't support it when the release of methane or contamination of water is present. I don't support it, number three, unless we can require that anybody who fracks has to tell us exactly what chemicals they are using. So by the time we get through all of my conditions, I do not think there will be many places in America where fracking will continue to take place. And I think that's the best approach, because right now there are places where fracking is going on that are not sufficiently regulated. So first, we've got to regulate everything that is currently underway, and we have to have a system in place that prevents further fracking unless conditions like the ones that I just mentioned are met.
Senator Sanders,
my answer is a lot shorter. No, I do not support fracking.
To Secretary Clinton's point, there are a number of Democratic governors in many states who say that fracking can be done safely and that it's helping their economies. Are they wrong?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I just love that kind of unabashed progressivism. Yes, we can't be wishy-washy on these issues. Where are you at on guns? Heavy regulation. Heavy. Not everyone needs a damn gun. You need to prove proficiency. You need to prove competency. You need to have insurance. That way, if anything happens with your gun, you have to take full responsibility for it. You can have the damn guns. We're not talking about getting rid of them. But let's be clear on this issue. Where are you at on fracking? Nope. 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 Where are you at on petrol? Nope. It's time to get rid of the internal combustion engine. Don't get wishy-washy and stupid on me. Don't try to kowtow to the Republican position on this. No, no, no. We have to stop dumping crap in the air. Because despite what you're being told, what happened with Hurricane Harvey was made absolutely worse by climate change.
Ed Cruz said that denying the existence of climate change made him like Galileo. Now, that's not really an apt comparison. Galileo believed the Earth revolves around the sun. Ted Cruz believes the Earth revolves around Ted Cruz. And just as an aside, I want to point out, when a guy who has his face on a hope poster calls you self-centered, you know you've got a problem.
So the article, it's a fact. Climate change made Hurricane Harvey more deadly. This is by Michael E. Mann, a climate scientist writing for The Guardian. So what do we know about the storm? Sea level rise attributable to climate change, some of which is due to coastal subsidence caused by human disturbance, such as oil drilling, is more than half a foot over the past couple of decades. This means that the storm surge was half a foot higher than it would have been just a decade ago, meaning far more flooding and destruction. In addition to that, sea surface temperatures in the region have risen about half a Celsius, close to 1 Fahrenheit. Over the past few decades, from roughly 30 Celsius to 30.5 Celsius, which contributed to the very warm sea surface temperatures. It's a delicate balance with this stuff. I don't think, when we see, you know, today in my area, it's going to be 102 degrees. Tomorrow, it's going to be 101 degrees. The next day, it's going to be 87. We see wild swings like that, and we go, oh, a couple of degrees is not a big deal. But when you're talking about something as large, think about how large the ocean is. Trillions and trillions and trillions of gallons of water. For the temperature of that to shift one way or the other takes some serious doing. There is a simple thermodynamic relationship known as the Clausius-Clapeyron equation that tells us that there's roughly a 3% increase in average atmospheric moisture content for each half a Celsius of warming. Sea surface temperatures in the area where Harvey intensified were half a Celsius to a full Celsius warmer than current day average temperatures, which translates to 1 to 1.5 Celsius warmer than average temperatures over the past few decades. That means 3 to 5% more moisture in the atmosphere. That large amount of moisture creates the potential for much greater rainfalls and greater flooding. The combination of coastal flooding and heavy rainfall is responsible for the devastating flooding that Houston is experiencing. Not only are the surface waters of the Gulf of Mexico unusually warm right now, but there's a deep layer of warm water that Harvey was able to feed upon when it intensified at a near record pace as it neared the coast. Human-caused warming is penetrating down into the ocean. It created deeper layers of warm water in the Gulf and elsewhere. When the Earth gets warmer, it holds more moisture in the atmosphere. When we get these storms, we get these cold fronts that run into these, you know, it causes more moisture to fall from the sky. What about when it snows? No, in the wintertime, there's so much dang gum snow. Give me down to your global warming. When it snows in the wintertime, bloody hell, I can't believe I even have to say this. You're getting a lot more snow. So around here, it's pretty damn dry and pretty hot, which is really uncharacteristic for my area. Then in the wintertime, we're getting a lot more snow. And that's because there's more moisture in the atmosphere. And when precip falls, it falls as whatever the temperature is outside. More moisture in the atmosphere means more moisture dropped wherever you are. But it also means it's slowing down these conveyor belts around the world that move air and that move water. And so some places get too much damn rain, like Texas and India and Bangladesh. Some places get absolutely no rain, like in my area. And we've messed up all of those conveyor belts by dumping all of our waste into the atmosphere.
Now, I am a member of the U.S. Senate Committee on the Environment. And in that capacity, I have talked to scientists all over this country and all over the world. Now, I recognize that all of the scientists who have studied this issue for decades are not quite as smart as Donald Trump. I got that. Because I know that Donald Trump, after years of intensive study, has concluded that there is no drought in California.
To add insult to injury, to make things just a little bit worse, President Donald Trump revoked an Obama-era flood protection rule just a few weeks before Hurricane Harvey hit. Quoting from IFL Science, a few weeks ago, the Trump administration did something rather petty. Not surprising, of course, whether you're talking about the Obama-era regulations designed to stop litter in national parks or Obama-era measures that were designed to reduce the country's greenhouse gas emissions. Anything with the former president's name on it appears to be up for the chop, no matter how sensible it was. The latest casualty came in the form of flood protection. The mandate, which was, again, signed into law under the Obama administration, maintained that all new federal buildings and infrastructural projects must take into account floods and build in defensive measures. This required buildings to take into account not just sea level extremes, but future sea level rises, you know, the type associated with climate change. Some cases, this required them to be constructed several feet off the ground. The original flood rule took into account the extremes of a once-in-100-year flood. Obama updated this to take into account once-in-every 500-year floods, which is what we just had in Houston, a once-every 500-year flood. The 2015 mandate offered anything the government was fully or even partially involved in constructing: hospitals, schools, universities, military installations, all came under this particular umbrella, as would any houses rebuilt by the government after a natural disaster of any kind. Trump revoked this clearly practical rule a few weeks back for no other reason other than streamlining. Yes, of course. Say that about anything. If you streamlined the United States Geological Survey to remove volcano monitoring, then yes, there is less to read through. But if a volcano erupts, of course, America would never see it coming. The catastrophic flooding is exactly the reason the 2015 rule was brought in. It is meant to save lives and stop millions of dollars worth of damage. And removing it was clearly ridiculous.
When we look at climate change now, we have got to realize that this is a global environmental crisis of unprecedented urgency. And it is not good enough, you know, if we, God forbid, were attacked tomorrow, the whole country would rise up and say, we got an enemy out there, we got to do something about it. That was what 9/11 was about. We have an enemy out there, and that enemy is going to cause drought and floods and extreme weather disturbances. There's going to be international conflict. I am proud, Wolf, that I have introduced the most comprehensive climate change legislation, including a tax on carbon.
So the argument right now, since Trump is doing such a horrible, horrible idea, the argument that's being had on social media, and initially I thought this was just one or two dum-dums, but apparently it's not. It was a hell of a lot more, and it led to Snopes doing a fact-checking on it. The headline: was Barack Obama president during Hurricane Katrina? Twitter users tried to pin the blame for Katrina relief issues on Obama, even though he wasn't president when it hit New Orleans. The claim: Barack Obama was president when Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans in 2005. The rating: false. Origin: damage from Hurricane Harvey continued to grow in Texas in late August 2017. Some Twitter users sought to defend President Donald Trump's response to the disaster by criticizing his predecessor, Barack Obama. Quoting here from a Twitter user: when floods hit Louisiana, Obama was too busy worrying about the tough sand traps on the golf course to go and assess the damage. That from at Jacob A. Wool. The argument that Obama did not do enough after Hurricane Katrina lashed New Orleans ignores the fact that Obama was not president at that time. George W. Bush was president. And it goes on from there. It's a multi-page story, and there are hundreds of people complaining about President Obama's response. This is what we're talking about. The hate, just the absolute hate for President Obama. They're blaming him for things that happened before his damn presidency and attributing nothing the President Dum-Dum has done to President Dum-Dum. And then there's this: socialism. After Hurricane Sandy just pounded New Jersey, quite a few Republican senators, especially those from Texas, decided, you know what? They don't need any dang gum socialism. Help. They don't need help. They don't need socialism. It's just going to make things worse for them. No money for the victims of Hurricane Sandy. None. And so it goes. One of those people was Senator Ted Cruz. He decided, yeah, Yeah, they don't need the damn money. And he voted against Sandy relief. Well, now Texas has been hit. And boy, Ted Cruz would sure like some of that sweet, sweet socialism money. So when asked, why did you vote against Hurricane Sandy relief, but now you want Hurricane Harvey relief? Well, that bill, he says, that bill was just loaded down with pork. Just porky. And so I had to vote against it. This does not make me a hypocrite. I had to vote against it. And of course, the fact check of that found out that nope, there was no pork. It was a nice clean bill. He still voted against it. The headline, everyone's a socialist after a natural disaster. You know the old saying, there are no atheists in foxholes. Well, I've got a new one. This by Joan Walsh over at The Nation. We're all socialists after a natural disaster. Even Senator Ted Cruz, the hypocrite who tried to block Hurricane Sandy East Coast relief in 2012, is now demanding the federal government expedite emergency funds for survivors of Hurricane Harvey along the Gulf Coast of Texas.
Making the Revenant was about man's relationship to the natural world, a world that we collectively felt in 2015 as the hottest year in recorded history. Our production needed to move to the southern tip of this planet just to be able to find snow. Climate change is real. It is happening right now. It is the most urgent threat facing our entire species. And we need to work collectively together and stop procrastinating. We need to support leaders around the world who do not speak for the big polluters or the big corporations, but who speak for all of humanity, for the indigenous people of the world, for the billions and billions of underprivileged people who will be most affected by this, for our children's children, and for those people out there whose voices have been drowned out by the politics of greed. I thank you all for this amazing award tonight. Let us not take this planet for granted. I do not take tonight for granted. Thank you so very much.
So that's Leonardo DiCaprio, good progressive and Hollywood liberal, or somebody who merely believes in science. And yeah, he was talking about when they made the movie The Revenant, how hard it was for them to find snow for use in the movie because of climate change. And of course, he comes out and he says things like that. And it just, there go dang gum Hollywood liberal telling us what to think and spreading lies and na 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 na. We've heard it all before. Same crap. But it's true. And it's real. And the real problem is the shysters that we have been listening to for a long time telling us that it isn't real. I do want to give a shout out, if I may, point of personal privilege here, to what is referred to as the Cajun Navy. There was no shortage of men and women that drove from surrounding areas. And this reminds me of, say, like the firefighters or the police, you know, running towards the danger while everyone's running away from it. There are pictures going around that show a few groups of men walking around with guns saying that they're there to help. But I don't know, showing up with a bunch of effing guns helps if you're just going to shoot people. Anyway, I do want to give a shout out to the Cajun Navy. So these folks drove in from surrounding areas using their own money, using their own trucks, their own boats, and doing whatever they could, going into the city, going from neighborhood to neighborhood and trying to rescue people. There's an article over by Rory Carroll over at The Guardian, and it talks about these three gentlemen in particular, Brad Johns, his dad Wayne, their friend John Utesh, and he says that these three men, you know, went towards the danger, went into the city to help people, and they went from house to house to house, and it says people would open the door. The headline is, "We ain't doing no damn good." Volunteer rescuers struggle in Houston. So they said they would go from house to house, and they would see that there are clearly people trapped inside houses. People would open the doors, standing in waist-deep water, and wave them away, shut the doors again. You know, people just sitting on boats outside their houses. Just, no, we're good. Go, get. Sitting on their rooftops. No, we don't need any help. And they go, what? Cajun Navy ran into the fire, ran towards the danger, ran into the flooding. trying to help. Now, that's not all of the stories. There are plenty of people that they were able to help, that they were able to reunite with their families that were living under bridges in Houston. There are lots of good stories about that, but there are lots of these stories coming out about how there were a lot of people that just, they want to stay in their homes. And what are they afraid of? Maybe that it's worse out there than it is inside their own flooded home. I got the neighbor watching me, like I told you. He watches me all the time whenever I do the show. Or are they afraid of looters? Are they afraid someone's going to come in and just steal all their stuff? You know, someone load up a boat and take all their stuff. It's heartbreaking, nevertheless. But when you lose everything, I can see trying to cling to hope like that. Just, it's all you have left. Please don't take me away from here. And please don't take what's mine. But just the same, kudos to the Cajun Navy. Those guys are heroes. And even if they're just trying to be heroes and they don't get to fulfill it, they still did the good that needed to be done. So yes, kudos to those guys.
If you plan to like save the world through global warming and you wouldn't really want to work for a green energy field, well, the place to go is actually to work for Chevron and Exxon. They actually are funding all of the green energy stuff.
Why do we believe the things that we believe with respect to energy and with respect to climate change? It's because that is the bill of goods that has been sold to us for a long time. And it's been sold to us because it's a very profitable industry for a very small group of people. We refer to this as free market disaster capitalism. And there's a story that did come out of Houston that wasn't as great as what I just talked about with, say, the Cajun Navy going around and helping people. This by David Edwards over at Raw Story. A flood victim in Texas told CNN this past Monday that at least one person was charging an entry fee for people trying to get to the second floor of an apartment building trying to escape the flooding caused by Hurricane Harvey. So Don Lemon put a woman on the air. This woman lives on the first floor and her neighbors live on the second floor. So she goes up the stairs and she says, "Hey, our house is flooded. Can we please stay inside your apartment? Please, just, we want to be dry, please." And the upstairs neighbor says, $300. Disaster capitalism. Making money off tragedy. There's no shortage of gouging going on in this area, too. I understand that this is a libertarian paradise. There's a picture that went viral. Best Buy, of all places, and it pissed me off because I buy a lot of things from Best Buy. But a picture from Best Buy went viral after they were trying to charge something like $45 for a case of water, 24-pack of $45 for a 24-pack of water, like these little 16, 20-ounce bottles. And then gasoline, $8, $9 a gallon. Just massive disaster capital, just gouging all over the place happening. And they go, "No, that's cool. That's the American way, supply and demand." I like the idea of neighbors helping neighbors, my fellow countrymen, looking out for one another. I like that idea. But in a world where we don't realize how fleeting life really is, and that the only thing that's going to matter after we leave this world is what we leave behind. The amount of money that we leave behind, unless we decide to put in our will that it's all going to go to charity, isn't going to mean a lick. If you're passing it down to your kids, your family, doesn't really matter. The good things that you did for your countrymen, that's what's going to matter. The good feelings that you leave behind after you leave this planet, that's what's going to matter. These shows, the things that I say on these shows, where I try to be part of the solution, this is what's going to matter. The fact that you try to charge somebody $300 to sit in your apartment with you after their apartment got flooded out, you're not going to be remembered well. The fact that you're charging $9 for a gallon of gasoline, you're not going to be remembered well. Whoever the numbnuts was that decided to charge $45 for a case of water, you're not going to be remembered well. But in the eyes of the American capitalist, the laissez-faire American capitalist, those who believe that there should be no restrictions, no regulations, no rules, and it's every man for himself. That's the American way.
In Alaska, a dog race without snow makes for tough sledding. Anchorage got less than 2 inches last month, so with the Iditarod starting tomorrow, organizers brought tons of snow by train from Fairbanks. Farther north, scientists are discovering that the sea ice of the Arctic Circle is melting faster than first thought. This winter, enough ice is missing to cover California three times. Here's Don Daler.
The Arctic Ocean is 6 million square miles, most of it covered in ice. But last month, the top of the world was up to 14 degrees above normal and broke the record for the lowest amount of ice in February, more than 400,000 square miles short.
It's completely unprecedented. People who work up there, you know, go up to the Arctic, go out on boats and cruise around to measure these things are absolutely stunned.
Had to bring in snow for the world's most famous dog race. All of the clips that I'm playing in today's show, none of them, and I did this last week, none of these were cut recently. I cut all of these clips months and mostly years ago and just been waiting for the right show to use them. I've got clips from 2015, clips from 2016, some that are even older than that. Because this has been coming for so long, and how we didn't notice it, how most of the public didn't notice it, when all the science is out there telling us that this was coming, is pretty stunning to me. But I've got a theory about why so many people are so ignorant on this particular subject.
Chances are you heard this was predicted to be our last day on Earth, a doomsday scenario from a California minister who spent millions of dollars in contributions from his followers to advertise the end of days all over the world. NBC's George Lewis reports now on what did and did not happen.
Times Square, New York, at precisely 6 p.m. tonight. Nothing out of the ordinary happened. The world did not end. That had been the prediction of Oakland, California pastor Harold Camping, spreading the doomsday word through billboards, pamphlets, and radio and TV broadcasts.
It will begin with a huge earthquake in probably on the other side of the world where the day begins.
But on the other side of the world, in the Philippines, Camping's followers waited, and again, nothing happened.
So you remember Harold Camping. Harold Camping believed something that was not true, something for which there was absolutely no evidence to support it. And he got an awful lot of people to follow him. He got people to sell all their possessions, their homes, their cars, all their belongings, because they honest all their life savings, their retirement accounts, got them to just give up everything because they so believed in his vision, not because it was true, not because it was backed up by evidence, but because he so strongly believed it, it absolutely had to be true. And they bought it. And they lost. And they lost big. And so here's what we're looking at now. Junk science has been sold to us for a long time, telling us climate change isn't real. It's not here. It's not happening. If it is, it's not human caused. And without any science to back it up, millions of people merely believe what the polluting industries are telling them. And it's not just limited to weather. It's also limited to other things, such as, say, tax cuts. The headline, corporate tax cuts don't create jobs, they enrich CEOs. This by David Dayan. So Trump has a plan for taxes, okay? And the still fuzzy plan has lots of moving parts, lower top marginal tax rate, simplification of deductions, and elimination of the estate tax, which he says only morons pay. Oh boy. According to Trump's economic advisor, Gary Cohn, but one centerpiece will be a significant reduction in the corporate tax rate from the current 35% to as low as 20%. By the way, nobody pays the 35% because there's already tons and tons of loopholes. This is necessary for three reasons, according to Republicans. Jobs, 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 right? To quote the White House, to quote Speaker Paul Ryan, it's got to cut the corporate tax rate because jobs, 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 jobs. Okay, a new report from the Institute Policy Study shows that this simply is not true. U.S. companies are already paying minimal amounts of corporate taxes, and the ones most likely under Republican theory to pour tax savings into job creation have instead been more likely to cut their workforce over the past number of years. The data shows that low corporate tax rates more often lead to increases in CEO pay and boosts for shareholders, not in creating jobs. Before breaking down the report, it is important to recognize that 35% The U.S. corporate tax rate doesn't reflect what corporations actually pay. The average effective corporate tax rate in the United States, once deductions are factored in, is around 27%, putting it below the global average. If you limit the review of profitable corporations, the number drops from to 19.4%. Corporate taxes as a share of GDP have fallen threefold since 1952, from 6% to 2%. Far from being overtaxed, corporations have carried an increasingly lighter burden and still aren't creating jobs. Their deductions for domestic manufacturing and bonus depreciation, which allows immediate write-offs for half the cost of long-term investments, and corporations benefit tremendously from stashing profits overseas, therefore avoiding taxation entirely. These trillions in offshore profits aren't sitting in a locker in Zurich. They're invested in instruments like U.S. Treasury bonds. In other words, the government pays corporations for their own tax avoidance. The IPS report identifies 92 corporations that that reported a profit from every year to 2008 to 2015 that already paid less than 20% in corporate taxes. So they already have their tax breaks, but they're saying that the tax breaks aren't big enough. And what they're doing with the tax breaks is they're boosting CEO pay. They're cutting their workforce. They're giving more to their investors. They're also buying back their own stock. And this works two ways. They take a bunch of that money. They permanently retire their own stock. They buy back their own stock. They use their own money, buy back their own stock, which therefore raises the price of the remaining stock. Then, once the price of the remaining stock is increased, they can either take that money or they can just introduce more stocks, making even more. It's a shell game, and it doesn't create jobs for anybody. It never has, and it never will. But this is still the discussion that we're having in America, not because it's based on facts, not because it's based on economics, not because it's based on science, but because somebody simply believes it so much. And then the other nitwits and morons and economic illiterates, they believe it too. And so this is the discussion that we're having in America, that tax cuts create jobs. They don't. And that climate change isn't real. It is.
Thank you so much to the Academy. Most of all, if you don't want big money to control government, don't vote for candidates that take money from big banks, oil, or weirdo billionaires. Stop.
So Daniel M. Kamen, who was the director of Renewable and Appropriate Energy Labs. He's also a professor and chair of energy at the Resources Group, professor of public policy at the Goldman School, and professor of nuclear engineering. And he wrote a letter to the president. And I'm just going to give you the first couple letters of – so he wrote – it's seven paragraphs. I'm resigning from my position as the science envoy for the Department of the State of the United States. Okay. My decision, next one, I'm not going to read the whole thing. My decision to resign is in response to your attacks on the core values of the United States. Next one. Particularly troubling to me is your response to Charlottesville, and it is inconsistent with a broader pattern of behavior that enables, that is consistent with a broader pattern and behavior that enables sexism and racism. Next one. Examples of this destructive pattern have consequences on my duties as science envoy. Next one, acts and words matter. Next one, character is vital in leadership. Next one, herein, with regret, I resign. Sincerely, Professor Daniel M. Kamen. The first letter of each paragraph spells out the word impeach as a strong, and this is public record now, as a strong signal to what he really thinks of the president.
Morale is in the basement, possibly lower. We're already at a point where we don't have enough staff to do everything that Congress has tasked us with. And to reduce the staff by another 3,000 is going to make it impossible for US EPA to protect human health and the environment. They're going to cut climate change activities. They're going to cut waters of the United States.
So that was John O'Grady, the head of the union of the EPA. And they're talking about how much they are just slashing and burning over at the EPA. That is the policy that we have chosen, because we've chosen Republican leadership, because we've chosen a Republican president. That is where we have decided to go with respect to the planet, with respect to the climate change, with respect to domestic policy. So what is the rest of the world doing? We can learn from them on healthcare. We can learn from them on foreign policy. We can learn from them on energy. We've decided not to. But let's take a look at what they're doing anyway. The headline, diesel and petrol car ban. Plan for 2040 reveals as 10 new power stations needed to cope with the electric revolution. This from thetelegraph.co.uk. They're planning on getting rid of all petrol-burning vehicles by 2040. That may seem like a long way away, but the car has been a part of our lives for more than 100 years now. Another 20 years of the car, the internal combustion engine being a part of our lives, isn't going to be that long. We need to do something about climate change yesterday, but they're doing something about it now. Michael Cove, the environmental secretary, has warned Britain can't carry on with petrol and diesel cars because of the damage they're doing to people's health and the planet. There's no alternative to embracing new technology, he said. However, the AA warned that the national grid would be under pressure to cope with the mass switching after the evening rush hour. We're talking about if everybody got into electric cars. So they're talking about upgrading the grid right now. Start upgrading the grid right now. Start moving towards renewable energies. Start putting more solar panels on rooftops. Let's find a way. This is the thing. You need to be unabashedly progressive. You need to believe in science. You need to believe in facts. You need to believe in things that are real, you know, things that are tangible, things that we've had good outcomes from because they are facts. It's amazing. I even have to push that point. And they're doing it. And we need to be that way too. We need to quit being so wishy-washy on what we're going to do. You know, how we're going to handle this and how we're going to handle that. Look, it's dirty. It's gross. Stop burning it. Stop putting it up in the air. It's making these storms worse. It's costing us way more money. It's costing lives, not just here, but around the world. And the United States Republican Party is the last political party in the entire developed world that does not believe in climate change. The last one. They're it. Conservatives in Britain, in Canada, and all around the world believe in climate change and want to do something about it. It is only the United States Republican Party that does not believe in this solid science that has to do with climate change. And it's on us. It's on us to get them the hell out of there. It's on us to push forward. It's on us to make the big change. But we have to be unabashedly progressive. How do you feel about fracking? Nope. How do you feel about oil? Nope. Don't put in all kinds of qualifiers. The answer is nope. If the question is fracking, if the question is petrol, the answer is nope. We have to be that way. We subsidize oil companies. They didn't do this on their own. We subsidize them. Perhaps it is time we start subsidizing the clean energy industry. Because these storms, these fires, the hell with which I see outside my window right now is only going to get worse. We don't become unabashedly progressive and start believing in facts, science. Stop relying on Republicans and God. They're both going to fail you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out there. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail is just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. Feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the Fire You Can't Put Out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Gavin for producing. Thank you for listening. We are the Fire You Can't Put Out, and we will prevail. This is Melvin, signing off. And now that I've woken you up, go save the planet. Good morning.